All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is January 6th, 2026. And our top story this morning is copper. The red metal is making another all-time high. Dr. Copper, the economic indicator, right? Copper price is moving higher. It's usually a sign of economic prosperity and health of the economy. So everything must be really good, right? As I look side-eye over at the ISM manufacturing PMI from yesterday, that says, no, everything is not good. ISM PMI yesterday was actually terrible at 47.9. Every category was deeply negative except for prices, which are still rising. Oh, good. That was a pretty awful ISM PMI yesterday, telling me what I've already known, that the economy's been in recession since 2022. So what the heck is going on with copper? Why are copper prices rising? A better question, why is copper price rising in unison with gold and silver? Gold is a safe haven asset. People usually bid up gold prices during difficult economic times. It's why gold tends to trade inversely with copper. So when you see gold and silver and copper rising in unison, something's wrong. Something's off here. We're not supposed to see that. Right. I mean, obviously, I could do the intellectually lazy thing and, you know, just be like, well, some AI Asian guy says the dollar dying and that's why everything go higher. OK, yeah, we could do that. We could just like stop reading, stop researching and just, you know, some AI chatbot who's probably funded by a gold dealer somewhere. Sure, we could just buy that, or we could read a little bit more and we could say maybe it's got something to do with tariffs. Maybe the fact that the U.S. warehouses, they're not actually using all the copper, but they are stockpiling it like crazy, draining copper from vaults at the LME over in London. Hey, that's kind of exactly what gold and silver did in the first quarter of last year when everybody was worried about tariffs, is we had that big drain of metal from London. This appears that we have a tariff worry again. Now, I thought we had put the whole copper tariffs thing to bed. Actually, if you guys remember back in July, copper prices took a hard dive when the tariffs on semi-finished copper goods were released. There was tariffs were placed on things like copper pipe and copper wire. And a lot of people were expecting tariffs on copper bullion or copper ore. No, that didn't happen. But we still never really got answers on finished copper, whether or not that's going to be tariffed or not. There's still an open 232 investigation there. So we still don't know. And people aren't running that risk. They're stockpiling copper in U.S. warehouses. Now, we've also had some things like mine collapses last year, geopolitical instability in a lot of copper-producing countries, especially in Latin America, big protest labor disputes in Latin America. So that has somewhat limited new copper supply coming out of the ground. Put all these things together, you've got more expensive copper at a time when copper should be moving lower because of the slowdown in manufacturing. It's kind of interesting to watch here. And dare I say it, we're getting an incorrect economic signal from a very important indicator this morning. Meanwhile, we've got precious metals continue to do well. It's a slow day in silver. It's only up $2. Things I never thought I'd say. When you see silver up $2 in the morning, usually stackers are like, yeah, it's a great morning for metals. No, it's quiet morning. I mean, we're getting used to like 5 to 10% swings in a day, aren't we? But the metal's looking pretty good today. Gold holding above 4,400, actually threatening to go to 4,500 here. Interesting. Also, prices in Shanghai for silver continue to rise. 87.25, the closing price in Shanghai yesterday. Now, shouldn't we be seeing metal? If you've got like an $8 arbitrage opportunity per ounce of silver, we should be seeing metal being loaded onto planes in New York and London and flown into Beijing or flown into Shanghai. I don't know that we are seeing. I'm not seeing it. I haven't heard or read anything about that happening. And I don't really see anything like big explosions and backwardation or anything like that to suggest that's even happening, which makes me wonder, why isn't that happening? Assuming it's not. I don't know that it isn't. Remember. But we should be seeing metal fleeing the West and heading to the East to capture these higher prices. Where are the stories about that? I don't know. what's going on there. Maybe the market doesn't believe these Shanghai silver prices. I mean, again, these AI chatbot videos are certainly making a very big deal out of it. If you buy into that BS, I can't help but wonder, where are the planes full of metal landing in Shanghai? Maybe those prices aren't really that real. Another story that the AI chatbots are very big on pumping is this three-week-old story out of Clarksville, Tennessee about Korea Zinc. It is an interesting story. I think people are highlighting it for the wrong reason right now, but Korea Zinc has agreed to tear down and rebuild a smelter in Clarksville, Tennessee that they're buying from a Trafigura subsidy or subsidiary. That story actually broke on December 15th, but of course, you know, nobody really paid attention to that story when it originally broke. Now I see it everywhere on these highly suspicious conspiracy theory metal pumping websites. And again, guys, anybody who's been following this channel, you know I am like uber bullish silver. I always have been. That's where my channel came from in the first place. But there's just so much BS in the metal space right now. Be careful. We'll talk about this Clarksville, Tennessee story and what it means and what it doesn't mean. But that's also going on here this morning. We've got China has put export controls on Japan, on the Japanese military in particular. Man, the Chinese really took it personally when Sanae Takaichi said that if China invades Taiwan, they might have to intervene militarily. I mean, look, the Japanese have been putting missiles on the Senkaku Islands for the last, I don't know, 5 years. In preparation for what many consider the inevitable invasion of Taiwan. Why are we so surprised that the Japanese prime minister said a thing? Well, China can't take a joke. Oh, well, you mad? Taiwan is a country, by the way. Shout out to all the Xi bots in my comments who just get so offended every time we talk about China. Well, don't start World War III and I won't say bad things about China. How's that? Until I see anything to suggest you won't start World War III, I'm going to go ahead and keep talking shit about China. Because I don't like the idea of World War III. I don't know about you guys, but I generally think it's a bad idea to send young men's bodies to the bottom of the Taiwan Strait by the tens and hundreds of thousands to feed the crabs for no reason other than dictators' egos. I'm generally not in favor of that. Call me crazy. Meanwhile, we've got protests in Iran continuing. What are we in the third week of these protests in Iran? They're in virtually every province of the country now. There's a few that still aren't protesting. But this is the economic collapse ongoing in Iran. The Iranian rial has lost almost all of its value. And when currency collapses, people can't afford to eat and they get pissed off. And this is the inevitable result. Meanwhile, the U.S., I love this story. The U.S. has agreed to a global minimum tax. The story broke yesterday. United States has signed on to the accords with the Europeans instituting a global minimum tax. Oh, but there's one caveat, one little asterisk. I just love it. That story, that one made me cheer out loud this morning. Adidas has caught a rare double downgrade as an analyst calls for the end of the casualization trend. So I guess that trendy fashion statement of, you know, ladies wearing pajama pants or yoga pants with a business blazer and blouse, I guess that's going away now. The whole back to office thing. Michael Burry has made a bet on Venezuelan oil. It's not a new bet. He's held it since 2020, but it's looking pretty good here. We'll talk about that one. And EV Winter. That's a new one this morning in Bloomberg. I think maybe nobody saw that one coming. But we'll talk about that one as well. That is just as soon as we shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance. Hey, don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single business morning. And right now, the S&P 500 is modestly negative, down 3 points, 0.05%. The Dow is also in the red by about 53 points or 0.11% lower. And the NASDAQ is clinging to positive territory, up 21 points or 0.09% in the green this morning. So stocks kind of flat here. The U.S. dollar is a little bit higher. And this is another thing that's weird. It's only 4 basis points, 98.36. But the dollar has had a strong couple of days. Gold up, silver up, copper up, dollar up. What the hell is going on? That does not make sense. Somebody explain this to me like I'm five. But the dollar modestly stronger again this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year Treasury 4.864%. That's higher by one basis point. The 10-year yield is at 4.171, up by just a fraction of a point. The 2-year at 3.463% is also up by a fraction of a point. And the 1-month is at 3.617, down a fraction of a point this morning. Not a lot happening in bonds, at least not domestically. But one thing we have got to keep an eye on, guys, those Japanese borrowing costs. Let's set this to daily candles so we can get a good look here. They just continue to grind higher quietly over in Japan. The 10-year JGB yield, or Japanese government bond, 2.134%, up another 2.5 basis points. I believe this is an all-time high. It goes back as far as this chart goes back anyway. You can see not since the turn of the decade or the turn of the century have we been anywhere near this level here. But going back to the daily candles, guys, the Japanese borrowing costs have been rising pretty much every day for, I don't know, 2 years, 2.5 years. You see this trend just continuing. I got to wonder about that yen carry trade. I mean, the Japanese yen is continuing to weaken. We are seeing the Japanese currency weaken. So generally, people associate the unwind of the yen carry trade with a sudden strengthening of the Japanese currency, which we're not seeing. But we are seeing this rise in Japanese borrowing costs. And remember, besides the Forex headwinds, it's also the arbitrage between U.S. and Japanese borrowing costs that created the yen carry trade. So as these borrowing costs continue to rise, it is getting less advantageous to borrow in Japan, convert to dollars, and then buy U.S. assets. So keep an eye on these rising long-term borrowing costs in Japan. They're just going higher day in and day out. Also, looking at Bitcoin this morning, we've had a good couple of days in Bitcoin, $94,050. We are kind of up against this resistance level here. Let's put a horizontal line right around the cap. The short-term support resistance, I should say, is right around 94,600. So not much higher than we are right now. We rejected that level yesterday. We rejected that level earlier in December, and we rejected that level also earlier in December, twice now. So until we move above that level, I'm not ready to call like any kind of recovery in Bitcoin. In my opinion, this is a dead cat bounce. I could be wrong about that, but Bitcoin up now, what, 6 days in a row? I think Bitcoin is due for a big red down day. Hey, I could be wrong about that, but be careful, guys. Bitcoin winter, we're in it. Looking over at the commodities board, that's where all the action is once again this morning. Gold is moving higher, $4,472 for spot gold near the highs of the morning. That's up about $24, a half a percent higher. February COMEX gold futures are at $4,483. That's up by $32, or 0.7% higher. Silver's having another good morning here, albeit a slow one, $79.08, up by $2.45. Who'd have thought a $2.45 rise in the price of silver would be a calm day? Well, that's the kind of week we've had, higher by 3.15%. March COMEX silver futures at $79.02, up $2.37, or 3.1% higher, just off the highs of the morning of $79.34. I like the shiny. We'll talk more about silver in a moment here, but copper, not that big of a move, 7 cents, but it is 1.3% higher, and it's making that move from an all-time high, $6.05 for March copper futures. We'll be back to copper in a minute. Platinum is up by 3.3%. Palladium is up by 3.2%. The metals are rising in unison. Crude oil is higher by 33 cents. Or about a half a percent, 58.64 for February WTI crude. So let's talk about what's going on in copper. We've got a pretty good one in Bloomberg this morning explaining this. Copper surges to fresh record as inventories are locked in the U.S. And the inventories locked in the U.S., it's not really a sign of economic prosperity. It is a dislocation in markets being created by policy uncertainty, and it is sending a false bullish signal to the economy. Copper extended a powerful rally after bursting through $13,000 a ton for the first time as investors bet on a tighter market and a risk-on mood took hold in broader financial markets. Since when does copper rally in risk-on? Copper does rally in risk-on. Copper usually doesn't rally in risk-off. But if we are looking at this big risk on move, then why is gold rallying? This is why we're seeing these conflicting signals here. 3-month future surge as much as 3.1% to a record $13,387 a ton in London on Tuesday, surpassing a peak set on Monday. Expectations that the Trump administration may introduce a tariff on refined metal have drawn huge volumes of inventory into the U.S., potentially leaving the rest of the world short as miners struggle to boost output. Inventories used to act as a buffer, but now they're locked in the U.S., said Li Weiji, head of research at Chaos Ternary Futures. So the buffer is gone and everyone will have to scramble. I want to scroll down a little bit here. They're talking about decision time. Trump has directed the Department of Commerce to deliver an update on U.S. copper markets by the end of this coming June, at which point a decision on tariffs for refined metal is expected. The department had earlier proposed a 15% levy starting in 2027, rising to 30% in 2028, but the White House has not confirmed that timeline. The amount of copper now stored in the U.S. has ballooned, with volumes in COMEX tracked warehouses alone now at more than 500,000 short tons after 44 straight days of net inflows. The tonnage in LME sheds has nearly halved over the past year, but is still higher than a recent low in June. So metal leaving London and headed to New York because of questions around tariffs. Stop me if you've heard this one. That is exactly what we saw in Q1 of 2025 with gold and silver. And by the way, that's actually responsible for driving the U.S. economy or U.S. GDP deeply negative in the first quarter. That's something that quickly reversed. I don't know that this is necessarily big enough that it's going to show up in the GDP numbers, but you can see here copper stockpiles in commerce warehouses. Look at this surge in metal, all right? So anybody who's out there on, you know, AI-generated videos saying the world is running out of copper and this is proof, take a look at this chart. This is COMEX warehouses. Does it look like COMEX warehouses are running out of copper? No. This is geopolitical instability in the copper markets. We've got plenty of metal. It just might be in the wrong place. We don't know if it's even in the wrong place. There's questions about tariffs. If the tariffs do hit, then yeah, the metal's in the wrong place. If they don't hit, then this metal in New York's probably going to flow right back to London. Meanwhile, other LME metrics point to a tightening copper market. Cash prices are trading at a premium of about $39 a ton over 3-month futures, a backwardated structure that points to some near-term supply stress. On the COMEX, a discount of nearby futures over later contracts has widened in recent months, reflecting the surplus of stock. Again, there's shortages somewhere, there's surplus elsewhere. The copper's just in the wrong place. Copper has also been supported over the past year by a series of accidents that halted production or stalled growth at some of the world's biggest mines. Meanwhile, smelters have faced pressure from miners to accept record low processing fees as they struggle to procure enough raw material, another sign of supply pressure. The gains in metals also partly reflected a shifting geopolitical backdrop that could result in more fractured supply chains over the longer term. The recent U.S. capture of Venezuelan leader. Okay, there we go. We're talking about Venezuela now. You can kind of see here, guys, the big question is tariffs. And look, we had tariffs earlier this year. Tariffs were placed on the semi-finished copper products, but not the refined copper, not copper ore. So we still don't know. But take a look at this chart. And there's a couple of interesting events. We're looking at daily candles here going back to the start of 2024. And there's a couple of events. First of all, obviously, this big rally here we've seen in copper. That's the most recent one. That's what we're talking about today. But you probably noticed this big red sell-off. That was at the end of July when we finally did get the tariff announcement, but it was not the tariff announcement that the world was expecting. It was only tariffs on the semi-finished copper products. And you can see we were kind of right around this same level. We've now broken out above this level. But we were here the last time, and we were here for exactly the same reason. The market got an answer that it wasn't expecting, and it sold off hard. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to happen again this time, but it's something to watch out for. And of course, another noteworthy event was the panic after Liberation Day at the end of March and into April, as the world was worried about a collapse of the bond market and economic mayhem around the world. You can see copper sold off big on that event. That just goes to show you, if we do get a severe deflationary bust, market collapse, big stock market correction, copper will probably sell off from that as well. So be careful trying to FOMO this trade or something here, guys. We have seen similar moves that didn't end well in the past. And also, shout out to Bai Xiaojun at Oriental Ghost on Twitter, who posted this one. This is kind of interesting here, guys. You're looking at the adjusted for the Forex rates and, you know, going from ton to ounces. Silver, the adjusted price in Shanghai, $87.25. That is a lot of arbitrage opportunity. I mean, what are we looking at now for silver? Just over 79 bucks. So you've got more than $8 of arbitrage opportunity to put metal on a plane and send it to Shanghai. All right. Somebody, and maybe any of you guys who work in the metal space out there, can anybody confirm that's happening? That metal is flowing from London or New York into China? I haven't been able to confirm it. And if there's an $8 an ounce opportunity, why the hell isn't it happening? Or maybe there isn't really an $8 arbitrage opportunity. I don't know. But a lot of people are making a very big deal out of what's happening with silver prices in Shanghai, and I'm not yet seeing it exert a huge influence on Western prices, which have been admittedly volatile over the last couple of weeks. Another story that some of the more eccentric silver pumpers are out there really talking a lot about is this story. And again, I would draw your attention to the date of this story, December 15th, all right? It's now January 6th. Why are we talking about this three-week-old story all of a sudden? Korea Zinc to build a $7.4 billion U.S. minerals refinery with Trump's support. I think this is a rare earth story, not a silver story. But again, all these crypto-pumping putzes are all trying to make this into a silver story. It may overlap with silver, but it's not a primarily silver-driven story. Korea Zinc on Monday said it will build a $7.4 billion critical mineral refinery in Tennessee that will be funded largely by Washington and help cut U.S. reliance on China for the building blocks of most electronics and weapons. The deal to build the first U.S.-based zinc refinery since the 1970s comes as the Trump administration has been investing in a range of mines and refining projects at a breakneck pace in recent months. The project also aims to refine copper and a range of other minerals considered critical by the U.S. government, officials said. All right, so this will touch silver, this story. If they're refining zinc and if they're refining copper, they're also going to be producing silver because silver is a byproduct of both copper and zinc. That's actually where most silver comes from, is copper and zinc mines. So you can expect some silver to be produced here, but the article still hasn't mentioned silver anywhere. An existing zinc refinery in Clarksville, Tennessee, roughly 50 miles northwest of Nashville, will be bought from Trafigura's NorthStar, torn down and replaced by a larger facility that will open in 2029 and grow to an annual output of 540,000 metric tons of critical minerals, including 300,000 tons of zinc, 35,000 tons of copper, 200,000 tons of lead, and 5,100 tons of rare earths. The Trump administration will continue to leverage every tool at our disposal to end America's foreign dependence on critical minerals and restore working class prosperity, a White House spokesperson said. Under the plan, Korea Zinc will sell shares worth $1.9 billion to a joint venture controlled by the U.S. government and unnamed U.S.-based strategic investors who would then control around 10% of the South Korea firm. The U.S. Department of Defense will hold a 40% stake in the venture, while Korea Zinc's stake will be less than 10%. So the DOD, or I guess we're calling it the Department of War now, they are going to hold 40% of this joint venture. This is all about shoring up the supply of critical minerals for the military. Korea Zinc will secure the remaining $5.5 billion for the plant through $4.7 billion in loans from the U.S. government and financial institutions, as well as $210 million in subsidies from the U.S. Commerce Department under the CHIPS and Science Act. And by the way, we're going to do a quick control F silver. The word silver does appear on this page, but where is it? No, it doesn't. The word silver does not appear. Oh, here it appears because I've got an ad for Money Metals Exchange. That's why. That's my internet behavior, not anything in the article. The word silver does not appear one place in this article because this isn't a silver story, guys. This is about rare earths. That's what this is about. These BS artists on the internet are trying to make this out to be the silver war and all this stupid stuff. Yeah, Guys, you're going to find that a lot of these websites that are pumping this garbage are financed by the bullion dealers. And ever since this crap has started up, ever since this AI Asian guy has become a thing around the end of November, beginning of December, you know what has happened? Dealer premiums have more than doubled. The premiums on American Silver Eagles went from $2 to $5 to $6 to $15. Premiums on junk silver rose. Premiums on generic silver rose. So the coin dealers have made out very well ever since stories like this started being falsely attributed to silver. Just be careful, guys. There is a lot of BS out there right now. That being said, I like the shiny. All right, we got to talk about ISM manufacturing PMI because, again, this goes to show you that the signal we're getting from copper, it's more about geopolitics than it is economic health because the ISM PMI was freaking terrible yesterday. The Institute for Supply Management Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index for the U.S. fell for the third consecutive month to 47.9 in December. Remember, any reading below 50 is contraction. Any reading above 50 is expansion. The lowest level since October of 2024 compared to 48.2 in November. So we're falling and we're falling faster. And the forecast was for 48.3. The reading showed U.S. manufacturing activity contracted at a faster rate led by pullbacks in production, 51 versus 51.4. So production expanded a little bit, but at a slower pace. Inventories, 45.2. That's following increases in November, pointing to recent economic uncertainty in manufacturing. Also, pricing pressures remained elevated, 58.5. The only number that's in expansion territory is prices. So you've got less economic activity, but higher prices. Oh, that sounds like the stag and the inflation, doesn't it? On the other hand, improvements in new orders, 47.7. Backlog of orders, 45.8. Both of those numbers were higher than last month, but still in contraction territory. So it's contracting and it's contracting slower. New export orders, those were higher, but still in contraction territory. And the customers' inventories index remaining in too low territory at 43.3. Those are positive signs for December, but several consecutive months of gains in these indicators are necessary for a longer-term recovery. In addition, employment contracted at a slower pace, 44.9 versus 44. So not good for the ISM PMI. You can see here, this has been trending lower all year. Again, guys, any of the benefits from the trade war and from the tariffs and the reshoring of production, it's going to take a long time to get here. The higher prices will get here before the jobs will. And we're not exactly a country of people who are disciplined and willing to take the pain up front for benefit later. We're more interested in short-term gratification at any cost. That being said, take a look at the five-year chart of the ISM manufacturing PMI. And this is one of the reasons why I always say the U.S. has been in a recession since 2022, and we've just papered it over with things like this BS bubble in data center construction and government spending and private credit and extend and pretend. You can see manufacturing started to decline at the end of 2021, and it fell all through 2022, and it has stayed low ever since. It's another reason why I say we've been in a recession this whole time. We just changed the definition to avoid it. Meanwhile, China slaps export controls on Japan's military for Taiwan remarks. Maybe don't be so sensitive, President Xi. Geez, it's almost like they took it personal. China imposed controls on exports to Japan with any military use, intensifying a dispute between Asia's top economies over remarks Japanese Prime Minister Sanae Takeuchi made last year on Taiwan. All dual-use items are banned from being exported to Japan for military use, effective immediately, China's Ministry of Commerce said in a statement on Tuesday. Exports for any other end-user purposes that could enhance Japan's military capabilities are also prohibited, it added, without elaborating. This is a quote from China now. Japan's leader recently made erroneous remarks on Taiwan, hinting at the possibility of military intervention in the Taiwan Strait, a ministry spokesperson said in a statement. Those comments violated the One China principle and were of malicious nature with profoundly detrimental consequences, according to the spokesperson. Don't invade Taiwan and maybe it won't be detrimental. Don't start World War III, right? And yeah, I realize the irony. Just yesterday, we were talking about U.S. intervention in Venezuela and Yeah, U.S. bombed Iran, all right? Don't mistake my criticism for China for a defense of United States foreign policy over the last few decades. It ain't. That being said, don't start effing World War III. Why is that such a controversial statement? Oh, these erroneous statements that violate the one-child policy. Yeah, okay. Sorry to interfere with your communist globalist ambitions. By the way, the export controls mark China's latest move in a pressure campaign against Japan after Takaichi became her nation's first sitting leader to say Tokyo could deploy its military if Beijing attempted to seize self-ruled Taiwan. Why do we call Taiwan a self-ruled island? Why don't we just call it its own country? Because it is. It hasn't been part of China since, what, like 1940-something? Yeah, all right. She has since refused to retract those comments, maintaining that her country's policy remains unchanged. China's measures also came during South Korean President Lee Jae-myung's visit to Beijing, where Chinese leader Xi Jinping urged him this week to stand on the right side of history. Both U.S. allies, Japan and South Korea, have previously aligned with Washington in providing a counterbalance to Chinese economic and military might in the region. China restricted rare earth exports and global measures rolled out last year during President Trump's trade war. Rare earths and the magnets made from them are used heavily by militaries and weapons like fighter jets, drones, and missiles, and are also critical for manufacturing goods such as smartphones and electric vehicles. Japan relied on China for around 70% of its rare earth imports as of 2024, according to the Japan Organization for Metals and Energy Security. In 2010, during an earlier territorial dispute, China stopped shipping the critical materials to its neighbor, wreaking havoc across Japan's manufacturing industry. Today's public announcement from Beijing, with its narrower focus on supplies to the military, appears to fall short of that kind of sweeping ban that was enforced back then. So after all is said and done, it appears to be really just a bunch of bluster, more silly war of words. Oh, the Japanese prime minister said a thing. You take that back. No, I won't take it back. All right, everybody just take your ball and go home. Seriously, it's like watching my kids fight. Meanwhile, we've got protesting has expanded in Taiwan. Iran unrest deepens as U.S. attack in Venezuela sharpens Trump intervention threat. The widespread unrest fueled by long-running economic crisis in Iran killed at least 29 people and more than 1,200 people have been arrested. Widespread anti-government protests have roiled Iran for over a week, forcing its leaders to weigh options to quell the unrest as U.S. President Trump raised the threat of an intervention. Are we going to bomb them again? Jeez. The spreading unrest, which began in Tehran's bazaar on December 28th, is fueled by growing frustration with a long-running economic crisis in Iran and has turned increasingly violent in recent days. At least 29 people have been killed and more than 1,200 arrested, according to Human Rights Activist News. The anti-regime demonstrations have spread to over 250 locations across 27 of Iran's 31 provinces, according to the group. Tehran sought to quell the protests with Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, saying Saturday that rioters must be put in their place, a remark widely interpreted as a signal for security forces to end the demonstrations. Meanwhile, Iranian President Masoud, Pezeshkian, has struck a more conciliatory tone, urging dialogue and promising economic reforms in a bid to placate demonstrators demanding political change, action on corruption, and relief from rising living costs. The promises included provision of monthly stipend of 10 million reals, that's about $7 per person, in non-cash electronic credits. Universal basic income, that's their answer, print money to solve a currency collapse. That's quaint. Still, the public unrest has continued, expanding from economic grievances to broader frustration with the regime, with some protesters chanting death to the dictator, a reference to Khamenei, who holds ultimate authority over the state. Scrolling down a little bit here, the rial, Iran's official currency, collapsed in December, falling to a record low of around 1.45 million rials to the dollar at the end of 2025, while inflation reached 42.5%. And when it gets too expensive to eat, people get pissed off. This is not new. The long-running economic crisis in Iran could pose greater risk to the regime than the prospect of a U.S. intervention, David Roche, veteran investor and strategist with Quantum Strategy, said to CNBC on Monday. Iran is not going to fall because of intervention by the United States, Roche said, citing the geographic and political constraints. Instead, he said, sustained protests combined with worsening domestic economic conditions would pose a greater risk. So we've got more instability in Iran here. President Trump threatening, if you kill the protesters, we're going to bomb you again. I'm sure he's riding off the back of, you know, everything that just happened in Venezuela to try to be like, take me seriously. World just seems to be steamrolling towards World War III, doesn't it? Meanwhile, this story, in a much more positive note, U.S.-based multinational companies will be exempt from global tax deal. You know, the story broke yesterday that the U.S. had agreed to a global minimum tax. And I remember seeing that headline and saying, this can't be right. It doesn't sound accurate. Well, apparently it was accurate. The U.S. did agree to a global minimum tax yesterday with one rather hilarious asterisk attached to that. U.S. multinational corporations will be exempted from paying more corporate taxes overseas in a deal finalized by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The OECD announced Monday that nearly 150 countries have agreed on the plan initially crafted in 2021 to stop large global companies from shifting profits to low-tax countries, no matter where they operate in the world. The amended version excludes large U.S.-based multinational corporations from the 15% tax, after negotiations between President Trump's administration and other members of the Group of Seven wealthy nations. And this is kind of hilarious. You know, Europe wants their global minimum tax for companies, and the United States says, the U.S. says, fine, we'll sign on to your agreement, but our companies don't have to adhere to it. Basically, it doesn't apply to us. That's how you got the United States to agree to it, by saying it doesn't apply to the United States. The most recent version of the deal waters down a landmark 2021 agreement that set a minimum global corporate tax of 15%. The idea was to stop multinational corporations, including Apple and Nike, from using accounting and legal maneuvers to shift earnings to low or no tax havens. Those havens are typically places like Bermuda, the Cayman Islands — they don't mention, but Ireland is another one — where the companies actually do little or no business. So yeah, your globalist tax hike doesn't apply to U.S. companies. Meanwhile, we've got a new fashion trend appears to be emerging, and take this one with a grain of salt. This may come as a shock to some of you, but I am not a fashionista, so I'm just going to go by what I'm told here. Adidas gets hit with rare double downgrade as BOFA calls for the end of the casualization trend. Adidas shares stumbled on Tuesday with the apparel maker's stock, the worst out of Europe's top 600 stocks, after a brokerage issued a rare double downgrade. Adidas fell 7%. It was the worst performing component of the stock's Europe 600 as Bank of America cut its rating to underperform from buy. Adidas' price target was cut to 160 euros from 213 as analysts urged that the turnaround story is well known. Upgrades to earnings estimates stopped months ago, and there will likely be a slowdown in organic sales after the World Cup. The 20-year casualization trend, with sneakers rising from 20% of market share of footwear to 50%, culminated with COVID and is largely complete, they said. And sports participation, at least in the biggest market of the U.S. with more than 40% of revenue, is not increasing. Now the analysts expect sales will be on par with global GDP growth of about 5%, including inflation, but not much faster than that. So the casualization trend is apparently over. Wearing yoga pants to work won't be a thing for much longer. That's according to this guy at Bank of America. Adidas stock down 5.25% yesterday on that double downgrade. It's also down 33.4% over the last year. Pay attention if you own the likes of Nike, Lululemon, Adidas, any of those athleisure companies. Probably not good days ahead for them, although they're already down quite a bit. Let's go pretty quick through this one. Michael Burry's big play off the U.S.-Venezuela situation, which the investor has held for years. We're getting kind of short on time here, guys. It's Valero Energy. Michael Burry bought it in 2020, and he wrote in a Substack post yesterday that Valero, because they own the refineries that are tailor-made to process Venezuelan heavy crude, that they are likely to be the beneficiaries. Let's just throw one word of caution in there, guys. Venezuela is far from a done deal, and it's going to be years, if at all, before anything actually happens. That's really the story. Valero Energy is the one that Burry has been invested in for several years here. Last one of the day, automakers face an EV winter in 2026. as sales growth slows. The risk to China's momentum and U.S. reversals and European wavering spells trouble for electric vehicles in the year ahead. Called this one a bubble years ago. It looks like it was a bubble. Are there any other bubbles I've been calling? But let's just move on. Growth in global sales of electric vehicles is expected to slow this year as China winds down some subsidies. Europe wavers on its phase out of combustion engines, and U.S. producers and policymakers make a U-turn from the segment. Bloomberg expects drivers to buy 24.3 million passenger EVs this year, an increase of only 12% and weaker than the 23% growth in sales last year. Even those numbers are somewhat deceptive because all of that growth is in China. The U.S. is actually expected to decline. In the U.S. in particular, electric vehicle makers are facing an EV winter and will need to navigate bumpy months ahead before a likely revival in sales in 27 and 28, said Nathan Neese, Boston Consulting Group's lead for EVs and energy storage. Though the long-term trajectory for battery-powered vehicles remains positive, there isn't a 2026 story buried that says there's lots to be optimistic about. Now, they're showing global EV sales. You probably zeroed in on the pink right away. That is China, and that's the only category that is going to grow. A little bit of Europe, they're saying marginal growth in Europe, but really China's EV growth is all of the growth for the year. U.S. EV growth has turned negative now, and it's expected to continue negative for a while here. Not such a good time for the EV market. Did I have anything else in this article? No. Oh, here we go. While EV policy is deteriorating, the sector's economics are improving. Affordability has been among the largest barriers to EV adoptions in the U.S., and battery prices, the most expensive part of any electric car or truck, fell another 8% in 2025, according to BNEF. Car makers that can cut costs and offer affordable models in the most desirable segments are likely to see sustained sales growth. In the U.S., producers are expected to debut several models in 2026 with sticker prices far below the average price drivers pay for an internal combustion engine car. The sweet spot of the U.S. auto market is the midsize SUV that costs $35,000 or less. American drivers buy somewhere around 2.5 million midsize SUVs every year, and 40% of them fall under that price threshold. So apparently that's the goal. A fully electric midsize SUV that costs less than $35,000. Does such a thing even exist? I don't know, but I guess that's what they're aiming towards. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. or Mrs. I'm just going to say Café Snow. Is that like a term for a fancy person who appreciates caffeine? Are you a Café Snow? Is that like a caffeinista? I don't know, but thank you very much for being a new YouTube member. Welcome to the Melonheads. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. Armando Reyes says, I still can't believe that we're not in a depression. No, I wouldn't say a depression, but I would say we have been in a deep, sustained recession. Guys, go by what you live and what you feel and what you see in your own circle. And I think for 90% of people, they would agree that the U.S. has been in a recession since 2022. I really think so. I think 10% of people are doing really well, which is probably the 10% of people who are on Bloomberg saying, what's the matter with you plebs? The economy is obviously so good. Haven't you seen my portfolio of tech stocks? That doesn't really matter to people in flyover country. See also that ISM PMI that shows manufacturing has been in decline for the better part of 3 years now. So a depression? No, I don't think we're in a depression. But I do think we are in a recession, and we have been for several years, and the powers that be just don't want to admit it. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. Thank you to the Challenged Investor. Nothing to say, just being a swell guy. Thank you so much. I appreciate the support of the channel. What else we got here? Thanks again, Challenged Investor. Pasta Man, what's going on, brother? He says, people complain local coin shop only paying $72 for silver. All right, so I'm not complaining about my LCS. I like my LCS. I haven't been there for a few weeks, but I do like my shop. The one thing I would say about that, you know, they're paying $72 for silver. Watch the spreads, guys. All right. There's this one in particular, this one website, big Twitter feed. I know for a fact it is financed by a bullion dealer, and they are repeatedly talking about how physical metal is $120 in India, and it's $150 in China, and $100 and whatever in whatever country. Oh my God, physical metal. They're not disclosing. Oh, by the way, I sell physical metal. And also the website that pays for this garbage is not offering $120 or $150 to buy the metal back. No, they're actually offering like $7 or $8 back of spot to people to sell their metal. So in one breath, they're out on the internet saying, oh my God, this stuff sells for $120, not disclosing that they sell it and the price they're offering to buy it back at is much below that. Guys, I see bullion dealers doing some really shady shit right now, to be honest with you. And ever since this AI Asian guy came out, premiums at bullion dealers have more than doubled. I'm seeing a correlation here. It doesn't necessarily imply causation, but cui bono? Who has benefited from this AI slop that has caused a retail fervor for physical metal? Who's benefited? I don't know, but I'm seeing a pattern here. Anyways, but yeah, $72 for silver. Let's put that in context. 6 months ago, would you complain if you could sell your silver for $72? Probably not. So the paper price has moved dramatically. That being said, the blowout in spreads means all of this enthusiasm that they're ginning up using blatantly false information is just padding their profits at the expense of retail physical metal buyers who don't know any better. And that pisses me off to no end. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man with the pink one. Thank you, brother, for supporting the channel. Says, morning, Jack. Always a great way to start the day. Thank you so much, Nacho Man. I appreciate the generosity. And yeah, and the kind words as well. I do agree. This is a great way to start the day. Thanks again, Nacho Man. Armando's back again. Says, welcome to the greatest pay-to-play presidency in the U.S. I'd love to disagree with you because I voted for the guy 3 times, but empirical data suggests you're right, Armando, right? I mean, the greatest example of pay-to-play is, oh, NVIDIA, your chips are a national security concern if we sell them to the Chinese, unless you give us 15%. And then 15%, that national security risk, it goes right TF away. Yep, pay-to-play, that is exactly what it is. I mean, we've gone beyond the transactional nature. Trump has always been very transactional, right? That's nothing new. In my opinion, it is becoming outright kleptocracy, though. It really sucks. I think fraud does not know party boundaries. Fraud does not know red versus right, blue versus red, or left versus right, all that other stuff. I really messed up my metaphors there. Fraud is universal right now. Both parties do it. Neither party is serious about stopping it. They'll all be like, oh, look at the other guy does all of this fraud while they do it themselves. And right now the Republicans are the ones in charge and they're the ones doing it. That sucks. Thank you very much, Armando. Appreciate the support of the channel. But wait, Armando's back with more. He says the merger of state and corporate powers is fascism. I would say that's more of a communist thing, to be honest with you. State ownership of the means of production, right? I mean, the communists call it worker ownership of the means of production. So, the workers never really own anything, though, do they? So I would say, own nothing and be happy. I would say it more resembles communism than anything. But the real reason for it, look at the department that is taking the stake in that smelter in Tennessee, which, by the way, was dormant. They're not seizing the means of production. They're buying it and they're starting it up again. That is a wartime economy. If this was a prosperous industry that was up and running and making all this money, and then the government came in and said, it's mine now, it belongs to the people, in other words, mine, that would be communism. But this is a dormant, rusting hulk of a facility that's going to be torn down and rebuilt using government dollars. I hope the government eventually divests it. Hey, maybe even at a profit and then gets out of the business, because I suspect the government will really suck at running this business efficiently. But that being said, I think it more resembles a shift to a wartime economy, which, all these events that we're seeing, it's all leading towards this conflict in the South China Sea that I really hope doesn't happen, but it looks inevitable. Thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel. JSM, thank you, sir, for being a melonhead for 1 month. Says, who else is ready to teleport back to the 90s? Don't threaten me with a good time. Let's go all the way back to the 80s. I thought the 80s was awesome. I was just a toddler for the earlier part of the 80s, admittedly. But yeah, I'm ready to go back to the 90s. I'm good with that. The music, man, let's bring grunge back. I like grunge. Grunge was good. Thank you, JSM. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Troy Rhodes says, casual, I wear a tux to the gym and yard work. Oh, well, pinkies up while you're raking them leaves, Tory Rhodes. Now, my casual, business casual, and formal attire is pretty much the same. Jeans and a polo, a polo and board shorts and bare feet in the summertime, unless midnight is biting at my feet. That's pretty much how I roll. But, you know, I don't get out much, so that's just me. Thank you, Troy Rhodes, for the laugh. And, oh, my God, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's another pink one. Apu Kontiki. Apu Kontiki? AK. Thank you so much, AK, for the very generous super chat. I appreciate that very much. And I can't help but notice the super chat matches the number next to the chemical symbol on the periodic table for silver, $80 silver. Did we hit 80 while I was talking? Hold on a second. Let me verify that. Did we hit 80? We did. Spot silver, $80. Oh, and March Comex futures just hit $80 right as I checked. 80. Price we have not seen since a week ago, right? Last Sunday, we hit $80. Is it time for another margin increase? I don't know. But right now, it's a tame day. I think we're only up $3 or $4, you know? Talk to me when we're up another $10 in a single day. Guys, just be careful here, all right? The markets are not behaving normally. Something is wrong. Something is broken in metals markets. Maybe it's a paper short squeeze. I don't know. Just be careful on leverage. That's all I can tell you, all right? We're in uncharted territory here. We could go to 150 before we stop. Or we could stop at 80 again. 80 could be the peak. You know, there is no charting this one. So just be careful. Everybody is out there with some like amazingly high. I think it's going to 500. I think it's going to $15,000 silver, right? They're a dime a dozen, these predictions at this point. Nobody freaking knows. That being said, I like this shiny. And I cannot freaking believe this thing, at least on paper, is worth $800 now, especially considering what I paid for it. That being said, I can't get $800 from this right now. As Pasta Man mentioned, they're buying it back for 72 an ounce. So even though the paper price is saying $80, maybe I'll get 73, 74 for this if I go to the coin shop to try to sell it, which is still phenomenal versus what I paid. But those dealer spreads blowing out, I find that highly sus, especially given all of the outright BS that is floating around on the interwebs these days. Just be careful, everybody. And thank you so much, Apu, for the very generous super chat and support of the channel. Thank you, everybody, for being so awesome this morning. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Really appreciate all the super chats and you magnanimous melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys so much for supporting the channel. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small. Dream big.